Hello, Coffee House Shops listeners. My name is Freddie Gray, and I edit The Spectator's US edition. I know you're all huge Westminster enthusiasts, but Brexit is over, and the big story of 2020 is going to be the American election. So I would like to urge you all to listen to my Americano podcast, where we discuss everything that's going on in Trump world and Democrat world. If you go to spectator.co.uk/Americano, you can listen to it all.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and Fraser Nelson. So is the government declaring war on the civil service? Over the weekend, the Sunday Telegraph reported that the government was looking to sack three top civil servants from their respective roles as permanent secretaries. Katie, what's the story here?
So this is part, I think, of a wider picture, which is ultimately tensions between the government, number 10 specifically, and the civil service, how Whitehall works. Now, the story at the weekend, which I think has been leading the news bulletins to a degree, is this idea relating to three permanent secretaries who, there's a sense that there's a hit list, that's one way of calling it. There's also a word, I could swear to describe the list, but I'm not going to, even though James isn't here. And ultimately, on this list are permanent secretaries who there is a sense that they are not in tune with the government to the point that they are actually a blocker in those departments. Now, the permanent secretaries involved, you have the Home Office, the Treasury and the Foreign Office. They all have slightly individual reasons. I think the Treasury, if you rewind a few years, Boris Johnson once said that the Treasury was the heart of Remain in government. And I think there's a sense that that permanent secretary is not fully on board with the government's Brexit plans. And there is suspicion, I think in part because of how the Treasury was under Philip Hammond, that when things potentially get tough in the months to come, potentially there's no FTA free trade deal on the table, you could come into problems if the civil service there from the top down isn't working constructively. Then you move to the Foreign Office, and I think the concerns with this permanent secretary goes to Boris Johnson's time as Foreign Secretary and a sense that they did not work particularly well there. I don't think the Foreign Office was a particularly positive time all round for Boris Johnson, but you have different accounts of who is to blame for that. And then finally, I think the issue that has been in the news the most over the past week or so is the Home Office and the Home Office permanent secretary. Now, there's lots of reports of clashes between this individual and Priti Patel. Also, though, I think it goes beyond just Priti Patel, because friends of Amber Rudd are very keen to point out they think the civil service was not up to it when Amber Rudd was Home Secretary and when the Windrush crisis happened.
She makes that point as well, doesn't she?
Yes, yes. I think friends so close. But they think that when that happened, she was forced to resign more because of others' ineptitude. Now, you could say if you're Home Secretary, you need to have a grip on things, but there is this deep-seated frustration on that level. I think the underlying theme here is the sense that there is a view that certain senior civil servants are getting in the way or making it more difficult for the government to deliver on its pledges or get its agenda through. And ultimately, how do you fix that? In terms of sacking, I think if you look at the detail of what's being suggested, and clearly this isn't a on-the-record quote story just by its very nature, but it's more about when these people, where term would naturally end, and it could be extended, but in this case it sounds as though there will be no desire to rush to extend these individuals' roles.
But Fraser, if Brexit is the problem here and these people are seen as too Remain-y, I mean, they're going to have a hard time finding people, civil servants to replace them who are Brexiteers, surely?
Yeah, and the characteristic of the British system is that you can get, take Tom Scholar, who's the chief civil servant at the Treasury. Now, this is somebody who used to be serving Tony Blair as number 10 in 10 Downing Street. Then he served David Cameron. And to Americans, they think, oh, this is crazy. Surely, how can a newly elected government come in and have as their staff the guys who were working with the other team? But under the British system, the civil servants have tended to pride themselves in being able to attack instantly to somebody else's agenda. The question, of course, is what happens if they don't. Now, the three people that we're looking at, so first of all, you've got Tom Scholar in the Treasury. Now, I can understand Downing Street's concern there, because the Treasury has got, I mean, he used to work under Gordon Brown, Tom Scholar, but the Treasury has got this institutional pride. And number 10 is worried about this institutional remain bias. By institutional, they mean that, for example, that notorious dossier the Treasury produced in the Brexit vote, which claimed 500,000 jobs would be lost if Britain voted for Brexit, let alone Brexit itself. That was something of a scandal within government. How could it be that the Treasury bowed to partisan pressure to come up with a document in the name of the British government that made all sorts of ridiculous, bogus assumptions, which sullied the name of the Treasury and impartial government advice? Because remember, this wasn't a Brexit document. This was a supposed to be HMG document. So you can see there. Then, of course, you've got Boris Johnson's own unhappy experience at the Foreign Office, where he is thinking that the permanent secretary there, Simon MacDonald, basically manoeuvred against him, tried to side with Alan Duncan, his deputy, who hated him. And now that he's prime minister, why have these people still there trying to thwart what you want to do? I think the most serious concerns I do come for Philip Ruttman at the Home Office. Just think what he's presided over. There was the institutional debacle for which Amber Rudd took the bullet. And also, there are briefings. You pick up the paper and read that Priti Patel isn't trusted by the civil servants. She's not trusted by MI5. So you're getting the Home Office, which we all know to be the unhappiest, leakiest ship in government, spewing out poison directed at the Secretary of State. Now, you can see why the government would think this simply cannot be allowed to continue, and that the changes they want to bring are not just political, they're about the way government works. They're about the civil servants' idea of themselves being permanent, whereby governments are transient. And that's what they want to change. They want to better align the civil servants to secretaries of state and the government's agenda. Now, very stupid of them to let it come out, if indeed they did brief out, but there was such a thing as a hit list, or something that rhymes with hit list, that they were going to dismember. Because if you're going to do this, you do it gently, you do it
subtly. You don't think they're deliberately talking tough to set a few...
No, what I think now is that there are some people at number 10 who talk tough and want it to be known that they're doing so. I do think Boris Johnson is one of them. I think any prime minister worth his salt is appalled to see civil servants briefed against by the government. It's a very bad look. It makes any organisation looks dysfunctional if you're getting one side briefing against the other. So I think that's why we had these forced joint statements of unity between Philip Ruttman and Priti Patel today, because obviously the Prime Minister has thought, this is terrible, we cannot have my government at war with my civil service, you guys have got to kiss and make up. There's no doubt there's lots of tension there, and I actually think a lot of the concerns are pretty justified, but this is not the way of going about it.
Yeah, and I think if you look at Boris Johnson and his team, I don't think it's just personal grievances with these individuals. I think, broadly speaking, there are deep reservations over how the civil service works, over how Whitehall works. We know Dominic Cummings, Boris Johnson's senior advisor, has written multiple blogs, given talks on the fact that he just doesn't think the civil service as it currently stands is fit for purpose. I think some of the ideas that have been touted in the past, I mean, Dominic Cummings once said that you shouldn't even have the role of a permanent secretary. He thought it was a role that didn't really make any sense because it combined too many things. So you have a policy advisory role, but you're also overseeing your entire department. And he thought you needed to split it up. Some, I think, Rachel Wolfe, who has worked closely with quite a few individuals in Number 10, wrote a piece suggesting that one thing would be to actually bring in private contractors, people who've worked in the private sector, into these roles rather than have this conveyor belt where it's very hard, in the view of some government, to get sacked as a civil servant. And they think, as a result of that, there is not enough accountability and it's really hard to hold individuals responsible for whether or not they can deliver projects. Now, I think if you look at Philip Ruttenham and the role of what's been happening in the Home Office, there's an argument that if an individual had been connected to so many things that had gone badly, would they really still be staying in this very senior role? So I think it does feed into that. But as Fraser says, it's how you go about reforming the civil service and how it works without just looking as though it is this kind of war between and almost a blame game, saying, oh, they're all useless. But I would say I think there are senior figures in this government who find there are lots of civil servants they do have quite a lot of time for. But I think there's also similarly quite a few that they do not have time for.
I'm not sure it's going to work either. I mean, it's true that the methods of government would bankrupt any company, But that was true when John Buchan wrote those words 100 years ago in this great novel, The Powerhouse. And it's just that's just always the way. This is why I think Dominic Cummings is likely to be disappointed in reshaping government. Government doesn't lend itself to being reshaped. Sure, in an ideal world, you'd have a completely responsive government that was very mission-focused. But the problem is, not that we've got permanent secretaries, that we don't have permanent civil servants, that they move around from department to department every 3 years. You've got very little institutional knowledge. So you've got something as important as universal credit, for example, an overhaul that's touching the lives of millions of people, which is being overseen by this constantly changing team. And I tell you, if we in The Spectator tried to run a magazine with people who quit every 3 years and went to another publication, we would never achieve anything of any value. But then again, that is government. That is just how the way it's wired. And I don't think there is going... I mean, sure, you can get the Trevelyan reforms and other great reforms of the civil service have happened in the past, but I don't think it's going to happen now. And that's why I tend to be liberal in my orientation in thinking that a good society is one where the government, with its dysfunctionality, does less and society in general does more.
And Katie, today is also the day that the membership stage of the Labour leadership contest starts. How is the race looking at the moment?
So membership ballots are out as of today, and we still, though, just for those who are finding this a thrilling leadership contest that they never want to end, you still have over a month to go.
Fantastic.
Because we are not going to get a new leader announced until the beginning of April. In terms of the race, I think it's safe to say that people still think Keir Starmer is very much the clear favourite.
And
I think
exciting.
It'd be a big shock if he weren't to. And I think what would be interesting is the speed to which people decide to vote. I was speaking to one Labour MP over the weekend who said that they actually just thought people were so bored by the contest that they would just get them out quite quickly, at least to mentally bring some resolution to the several multiple week ordeal. Others, I think if you look at the Lisa Nandy camp, the Rebecca Long Bailey camp, they are going to want to try and prolong this contest for longer, try and catch Keir Starmer out, because that's the only way I think they're going to be able to turn it around. There was one interesting report in the Mail on Sunday at the weekend that suggests that this could actually be a very bad contest for Rebecca Long Bailey. There's a chance that she would come third behind Lisa Nandy. I think if that were to be true, then that's very disappointment. And if you look at the odds, which Fraser has very helpfully handed passing his phone, I'm really worried I'm going to now say these things wrong, because Rebecca Long Bailey is 10 to 1, Lisa Nandy is 25 to 1, and Keir Starmer is...
He's 1-8 odds on favourite.
So that means if I bet £1 on Keir Starmer, how much do I get back?
Not very much. But you get £10 if you bet for Rebecca Long Bailey. And I think the odds, you know, look, I think people say...
You can also apparently still bet on Emily Thornberry, even though she's not currently in the contest.
Miracles happen.
100 to 1.
You can probably bet on you, Katie, somewhere, if you look at this down. But, I mean, look, people say it ain't over till it's over, but I think this one really is over. Keir Starmer, who has been uncharitably described as Ed Miliband without the charisma, is overwhelmingly likely to become the next Labour Party leader. And I think the conversations we ought to have now shouldn't be who's going to win, it's what is Labour going to look like when Keir Starmer is its leader.
Fraser and Katie, thanks very much. And to hear more from Fraser and Katie, they'll both be on a panel discussion we have tomorrow evening at the Soho Hotel. They'll be asking whether or not to give amnesty to illegal migrants in the UK. On the proposition side, Fraser Nelson will be speaking with Kate Andrews, and on the opposition will be David Goodhart and Alp Mehmet from Migration Watch UK. Katie Balls will be hosting. And to get tickets, go to spectator.co.uk/amnesty. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.